on the full moon day of May. More than 2,500 years ago, the Buddha, or rather the ascetic Siddhartha, sat under a tree which came to be known as Bodhi tree, and resolved to practice meditation until he gained enlightenment of being the Buddha. Ascetic Siddhartha has been practicing meditation and austerity, including self-mortification, for nearly 6 years, but he did not get what he wanted, that is, the Buddha faith. So, after consideration, he decided that that practice was not the right one. And also he discovered the right one, which was later called the middle way or the middle path. So he decided to practice that middle path or middle way. So he approached the tree about sunset, sat down, cross-legged, and resolved that he would not break this posture of sitting until he became the Buddha. And he practiced the mindfulness on breathing meditation. And in just about 4 hours, he reached the higher state of consciousness called jhana. And after reaching the jhana state, he also gained the supernormal knowledge by which he could remember his past life. And later he described the supernormal knowledge of remembering his past life on many occasions. And he said, the Tathagata or the Buddha recollects his many souls' past lives. That is to say, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world contraction, many eons of world extension, many eons of world contraction and extension. There he was so named of such a race, with such an appearance, such kind of food, such experience of pleasure and pain, such an end of his lifespan. And passing away from there, he reappeared elsewhere, and there too, he was so named of such a race, with such an appearance, such kind of food, such experience of pleasure and pain, such an end of his lifespan. And passing away from there, he reappeared here. Thus, with its aspects and particulars, he recollects his many souls' past lives. So it is the description of how he remembered his past lives. And when he remembered his past lives, he remembered endless rebirths, endless past lives. Because Buddha had the ability to remember any past life, however Remoted maybe is the way. And we might have remembered that long, long ago he was an ascetic and he made the verbal aspiration to become Buddha in the presence of another Buddha named Dipankara. And then he went through his round of rebirth from many, many rebirth or many, many lives to accumulate perfection. Sometimes the Bodhisattva was born as a human being, but sometimes he was even born as an animal, a bird, or a dog, or a fish, and so on. With this direct knowledge of his first life, Buddha taught us the teaching of samsara. The word samsara was so popular and was so used very frequently by preachers in Buddhist countries that everybody or every Buddhist was familiar with that word. Actually, Buddhists in those countries even adopt this word into their native language. Some with a little modification and some just as it is. So this word was known to Buddhists. Samsara. It is explained by the Venerable Jnanatipaka, the German Buddhist monk, as follows. Samsara, the wheel of existence, literally the perpetual wandering, is a name given in the Pali scriptures to the sea of life, ever restlessly heaving up and down, the symbol of this continuous process of ever again and again being born, growing old, suffering, and dying. More precisely put, samsara is the unbroken sequence of the khanda combination, which constantly changing from moment to moment, follow continually one upon the other through inconceivable periods of time. Of this samsara, this single lifetime constitutes only a tiny fraction. So this is a description given by the German Buddhist monk Jnanatipaka. Now, the word samsara is a Pali word, and it is compounded of two parts. Sam, one part, and sara, another part. Sam is a prefix with many meanings, and here it means again and again or repeatedly. And sara means going here and there or wandering. So samsara means repeatedly wandering or wandering again and again. And so this comes to mean the succession of rebirth. In the commentaries, samsara is defined as the unbroken, continuous occurrence of aggregate bases and so on. So at every moment, some aggregates arise and some disappear. And so this continuous arising and disappearing of aggregates or bases or elements is what is called samsara. And it is an important teaching in Buddhism because if we accept the law of karma, we also have to accept the teaching of samsara. One cannot be explained without the help of the other. And this samsara is compared to the ocean, or sometimes compared to a field. And so beings are traveling along this samsara from time immemorial, and they will be traveling in the future until they are able to make an end of this round of rebirth, or the cycle of rebirth and death, or just samsara. So we are the travelers on this journey of samsara. But people often want to know when this samsara began. We as beings want to know when we started as a being. Or in other words, whether there is a beginning of this samsara, a series of rebirth and death. Logically or theoretically, there should be a beginning. Since we are here, there must be somewhere when we began as being. So when there is, it is the middle of the samsara. We are in the middle of the samsara. So when there is a middle, there must be the beginning. But in practice, that beginning cannot be known, cannot be perceived. If we accept the law of karma, it is clear that there can be no beginning. There can be, we cannot know the beginning of the samsara. Because since we accepted law of karma, that this present life is the result of the karma in the past life. And that past life is the result of karma in the past life, and so on and so on. So you reach infinity, but there is no end of this cause effect relationship between the previous lives and successive lives. So, although logically there should be a beginning, in practice, a beginning cannot be reached, or a beginning cannot be known or seen. It is like trying to find which is first, the hen or the egg. So you may go back and back and back, and you may not come to the beginning. So in the same way, the samsara, or the beginning of the samsara, cannot be known, or is not known. And Buddha preached about the beginninglessness of samsara in many suttas. So in one of the suttas he said, inconceivable is the beginning of this samsara. Not to be discovered is any first beginning of being. Too obstructed by ignorance and ensnared by craving, are hurrying and hastening through this round of rebirth. So, although we are in the middle of the samsara, we cannot see, or we cannot conceive of the beginning of samsara. Then can there be the end of samsara? Yes. If we become arahant, then there will be the end of samsara for us. Because for each being, for each person, there is his or her own samsara. And that samsara will come to an end when he or she becomes an arahant and makes an end of suffering. So there can be the end of samsara, but the beginning of samsara cannot be known. And through this samsara, being has been reborn and died and reborn again and died, and so in this way, being has come a long way. The Buddha said, what do you think is more, the flood of tears, which weeping and wailing you have shed upon this long way, hurrying and hastening through this round of rebirth, united with the undesire, separated from the desire, this, or the waters of the soul ocean? The Buddha said, our tears, the flood of our tears is much greater than the waters of the soul ocean. If we could face all tears we shed through this long succession of rebirth. Long time have you suffered the death of father and mother, of sons, daughters, brothers and sisters. And still you are just suffering. You have indeed shed more tears upon this long way than there is water in the full ocean. Which do you think is more, the streams of blood that through your being beheaded has flowed upon this long way, deep, or the waters of the full ocean? Long time has you been caught as robbers, or highwaymen, or adulterers, and through your being beheaded, verily, more blood has flowed upon this long way than there is water in the full ocean. But how is this possible? Inconceivable is the beginning of this samsara, not to be discovered if any such beginning of being, who obstructed by ignorance and ensnared by craving, are hurrying and hastening through this round of rebirth. And thus has a long time undergone suffering, undergone torment, undergone misfortune, and feels the graveyard full, truly. It is fit to be dissatisfied with all the forms of existence. It is fit to turn away and see yourself from them all. Since beings have gone through this line of rebirth and death, beings have undergone suffering, undergone torment, undergone misfortune, in a very great amount, and it is said that being fulfilled the graveyard full. So there is a story of a man during the time of the Buddha who was particular about where he was to be cremated. He was a Brahmin and he was a proud man. So he said to his son, I don't want my body to be cremated on the place where some other person has been cremated. Then his son said, I do not know such a place. If you can show me, then I can cremate you when you die. So the father took his son to a mountain called Vejjakuta, and they went there. That morning, the Buddha ravaged the walls to see whether there are beings to be saved or to be helped. And that morning, he saw the father and son in his mental vision. So Buddha also went there and waited for them to come down the mountain. So when they came down, Buddha asked them what they were doing. And then the son said, my father was asking me to cremate him when he died on a place where nobody has ever been cremated. Then Buddha asked, are you sure the place your father has shown you is a place where nobody has been cremated? He said, I don't know. Then Buddha said, on this very spot, with this very name, because the Brahmin's name was Upasala, In this very name, your father has been kidnapped thousands and thousands of times. So Buddha said, there is no place in the whole world where you have not been to meet it. And hearing this talk, hearing this Dhamma, they became enlightened and they became twin entrants of Sotapanna. And then Buddha related the first story, more or less the same as the present story. And in that story, Buddha was an ascetic or a hermit who had the ability to remember former life. And Buddha said to the father and son in the same way that you have been cremated on this place, the same place on that mountain, for 14,000 times. So that is not a place where nobody has ever been cremated. Now, people from the east came here, they migrated to this country, and then somebody died here. Then his friend said, oh, it's pity that he died here and he had to be buried or cremated in a foreign or in an alien country. It would be good if he could take his body back to his native place or something like that. Maybe not be aware of this story, because according to this story, no place is a new place for anybody to be cremated or buried. So don't worry about don't worry about dying in another country, because you may have been reborn here in this country many times. Since we do not possess this knowledge, we don't know, but following this story, they may have been reborn here. That is why I think we are here now. Sometimes we meet someone, and as soon as we see him or her, well, we like him, or we hate him. Sometimes we go to a place we have never been before, and when we reach that place, the place looks very familiar to us, as though we have been there. And I think we have really been there in our past life. But we cannot remember past life, so we don't know exactly. So there is no place on the whole earth where nobody has ever been made it. So long is this creation of samsara. Millions and millions of lives we have in the past, and we will have I don't know how many more lives in the future. So long as we remain Sukhujanas, or ordinary persons, we will be going along this journey. Only when we become enlightened will this duration be shortened and ultimately cut off altogether. Now, in the modern times, there are people who do not believe in, or who do not want to believe in life, past life, or future life. But now there are, even in the West, there are more and more people who could remember their past life. Although they cannot produce scientific proof, yet it is difficult to refute or deny that they have been reborn in such and such a life or state. There were two friends in Burma. Both of them could remember their past lives. And one became a monk, and the other became a communist. So the one became a monk, and as a monk he was taught that there is rebirth, and he doesn't have to be told to believe in his God, because he could remember his past life, and so it is just evident to him. But the other one who lived in the communist was taught that there is no rebirth, no past life or no future life. This present life is the only life. And after this life, there is nothing. So he was indoctrinated by communism. But he found it difficult to accept, because he himself remembered his past life. So one day when we met, the mountain man, his friend, the communist told him that it was difficult for him to accept communist teaching. He refused the teaching of rebirth. So the monk said, "You don't have to ask me, or you don't have to ask anybody else. You yourself know that you had past life, and you decide for yourself." So later on, he gave up communist ideologies or communist teachings. So there are people who can remember past life, and for them, past life is as real as the present life. So if we accept the law of karma, we also accept the rebirth, or popularly it is called reincarnation. Now, since we have been long in this samsara, Buddha said, we ought to be dissatisfied with all the forms of existence. We ought to turn away from them all and free ourselves from them all. Because the samsara is a fearful place, because we are reborn as some being, and during the life of that being we suffer the loss, and then suffering and another suffering and so on. And so it is like a prison where people suffer. And so we should do something. We should get out of this prison of samsara, or this round of rebirth. Buddha once said that if one single living being during its suffering and prisoning for one single world period through this round of rebirth, one were to heap up all the bones, and the bones are not to be chased, there would arise a mountain of bones as big as this Rehpungla mountain. It is the Buddha said these words on the mountain. So if one single being, during its hurrying and hastening for one single world period, that means not all the duration of samsara, but only for one world cycle, only for one eon, but you heap up all the bones, and the bones are not to be chased, there would arise a mountain of bones as big as this Rehpungla mountain, and let's say as big as Mount Everest. And how is this possible? Inconceivable is the beginning of this samsara. Not to be discovered is its first beginning of being. Who obstructed by ignorance and ensnared by craving are hurrying and hastening through this form of rebirth. Because the beginning is inconceivable, and beginning is far, far away, and being in this samsara for billions and billions of times, and so if it were possible to keep up the bones of only one person during one world period, and if the bones were not to decay, then there would be a heap of bones as big as a mountain. Do you know how long one world period is? One world cycle. In Pali it is called. It were possible to heap up the bones of only one person during one world period, the decay of bones as big as a mountain. Do you know how long one world period is? One world cycle. In Pali it is called kappa, one world. So once a monk asked Buddha how long one world period was, and Buddha answered him, long woman's last 1 world period, and not possible is it to count it as so many years, so many centuries, so many millenniums, so many hundred millenniums. Suppose there be a mighty rock, 1 mile deep, 1 mile wide, 1 mile high, without breaches or crevices, of one solid mass. And whenever 100 years have elapsed, a man should come and rub only once with a little silken cloth against this rock. Then this mighty rock would vanish quicker than 1 world period lasts. This is the duration of 1 world period. But through many such world periods, O monks, have you hurried and hastened, through many hundreds, many thousands, many hundred thousands. And how is this possible? Inconceivable, O monk, is the beginning of this samsara. Not to be discovered in the first, is the first beginning of beings who, obstructed by ignorance and ensnared by craving, are hurrying and hastening through this realm of rebirth. So one world period cannot be measured in terms of so many years, because it is so long. And there is a note by the author here. Here the reader may remember that beautiful allegory in Grimm's fairy tale of the little shepherd boy. In Fada Pomerania, there is a diamond mountain, 1 hour high, 1 hour wide, 1 hour deep. There every 100 years a little bird comes and whets its little beak on it. And when the whole mountain is rounded off, then the first second of eternity has passed. So they have more or less the same simile to describe how long time is, how long eternity is, or how long a world cycle is. So during that time, if it were possible to heap up the bones of a person, one person, then there would be a heap of bones as big as a mountain. And we as Buddhists are exhorted to be satisfied with samsara, to find fault with samsara, and to try to get out of it, or to try to end it, so that we end suffering. And the only way to end samsara, or to end suffering, is by the practice of vipassana meditation. So all Buddhists are taught to look upon samsara as a place to be afraid of, as a place like a prison, and so to try to get rid of this samsara so that one gets out of suffering. And samsara, or the understanding of the sound of rebirth, is good in one respect, and that is when we want to get rid of anger against some person. In the Visuddhimagga, different ways of getting rid of resentment are given. And one of the ways is using our knowledge of samsara as a help. Buddha said, "Not easy is it, O monks, to find any living being that, upon this long round of rebirth, has not yet, some time or other, been your mother, your father, or your brother, or your sister, or son, or daughter. And how is this possible? Inconceivable, O monk, is the beginning of this samsara," and so on. So it is very difficult to find a being who has not been our father, our mother, a brother, a sister, a son, or daughter, or friend. So when we are angry with a person and we cannot get rid of that anger by other means, we may try this means. We may try to see him as having been our father in the past or our mother in the past, and think of that being as being something good for us. If he had been our father, then he would have been gone to different places to find money to support the family, braving the difficulties on the journey and so on. And if he had been our mother, then as a mother, she would have carried us in her womb for 9 months or 10 months, and then nurtured us and so on. So by applying this, our knowledge of the round of rebirth, we may be able to get rid of anger or grudge against person. So this is the only thing good about the samsara. That is, we can use the knowledge of our samsara to get rid of resentment or anger against any person. Otherwise, samsara is a place full of dangers, full of suffering. Now, do you really want to get out of this samsara? Do you really want to get out of this samsara? If somebody comes to you now and tells you, okay, I'll take out of this samsara now, come with me. Would you go with him? please wait a little. I have to settle something with my family or with my job or something. Or my children are still young, and please wait until they are grown up. Even the monk would say like that, let me settle something at my monastery. We have to attend to our lives and so much obligation to our lives and to people around us that we won't be able to get up and go with that person. And there's a story of a man in Burma. He was going to a Buddha statue and always asking him, may I reach Nirvana or something like that. But he was not sincere. He was just saying aloud so that other people hear him saying this. So one day a man hid behind the Buddha image, and when he was saying, may I attain Nirvana or something like that, he said, oh, you have been asking for Nirvana for many days, as if he was Buddha. And now I will take you to Nirvana, come with me. So he said, please let me discuss with my wife. So it may not be that we are not ready to get out of this samsara yet. And we have to see the real danger in this samsara so that we have desire to get out of it. Now, there are three things or three mental states that are said to perpetuate this samsara. Or in Pali they are called papanja. The meaning of the word papanja means perpetuators or expanders of the samsara. Extenders of this ocean of life. So long as there are these three mental states in our minds, our samsara will be expanded more and more. And these three things are craving, pride, and wrong view. So these three things are called papanja, perpetrators of samsara. But there is no ignorance among them. Why? Should there be ignorance? Surely there should be. Wrong view is different from ignorance. But When we say wrong view or craving or pride, we also mean virtually ignorance, because ignorance is always with these mental states. They are never without ignorance. So when we say craving, that means craving accompanied by ignorance. When you say pride, when you say wrong view accompanied by pride. So there are these three things, these three mental states, or these three mental defilements, which are called papancha, the perpetrators of samsara. So long as we are subject to, or we cannot get rid of these three mental states, we will be going on and on along this samsara, or the round of rebirth. Only when we are able to eradicate or cut off these three mental states altogether, will we be able to make an end of suffering, or get to the end of this samsara. Then how to get rid of these three mental states? Generally we'll say practice of meditation. That's correct. Practice of vipassana meditation. What do you see when you practice vipassana meditation? Or what must you see when you practice vipassana meditation? You must see the impermanence, suffering, of the three mental states altogether. Will we be able to make an end of suffering, or get to the end of this samsara? Mental state. Generally, we'll say practice of meditation. That's correct. Practice of vipassana meditation. What do you see when you practice vipassana meditation? Or what must you see when you practice meditation? And following that, if our practice of meditation progresses and becomes successful, then at the moment of realization of truth or enlightenment, we will be able to destroy them altogether, destroy them once and for all. Now, we are proud of ourselves, or proud of our country, proud of our achievements, so on. Why are we proud of this? Because we think that things are somewhat permanent. If we really see that things are impermanent, we cannot be proud of anything. If you really see that the aggregates in you are impermanent, the aggregates in you are appearing and disappearing moment by moment, you cannot have any pride in yourself, because it is just coming and going, and there is nothing to be proud of. So when you see the impermanence of things, you will be able to get rid of pride. And when you see that things are unsatisfactory, things are suffering, you will be able to get rid of attachment. If you really know that things are suffering, unsatisfactory, you will not want them, you will not be attached to them. So you will be able to get rid of attachment when you see the suffering nature of things. And when you see that things just happen on their own and you have no control over them, that is no unchanging and everlasting entity behind any being, then you will be able to discard the wrong view. The wrong view that there is a permanent entity administering us, I mean, governing us, making us do this and that, or making us suffer or enjoy. So this false notion of a permanent self will be discarded when we come to see that things just happen by themselves. There is no one who governs them, and we have also no control over them. So the seeing of these three characteristics, the impermanence, suffering, and insubstantiality or egolessness, will help us to first diminish the three mental states called extenders of samsara, pride, craving, and wrong view. And when we reach the stage of enlightenment, we will be able to cut these three things all together, and so make an end of samsara, or make an end of suffering. Tomorrow also, I will talk about it a little more. So, we have been long in this samsara. I don't know how many lives we had in the past, and how many more lives we will have in the future. Since we have been long in this samsara, we ought to be bored with it. We ought not to take delight in it. We ought to find some way to get out of it. And that some way is the practice of vipassana meditation. It is only vipassana meditation which helps us to really see the three characteristics of the three common characteristics of things that will enable us to eradicate the three extenders of the samsara: craving, pride, wrong view. And when we are able to destroy them, we will be able to destroy all suffering or get out of suffering. May you all be able to get out of this samsara by the practice of vipassana meditation. Thank you.